Welcome to the first New Mexico FBI Hop podcast. I'm Matt, and this is Paul, and we're the guys who bring you nmfbihop.com. And we're here today to talk to you about what happened this week in politics. And I'm just going to ask Paul, what do you think, what was the big stories this week?
Well, there's a couple major stories this week, but I think the biggest one, at least for people that live in Albuquerque, would be the Albuquerque Tribune closing. And I want to see what you think about that, because I know a lot of people have, you know, felt very strongly about it. Their last issue just came out Saturday, and lots of people felt very sad about it ever since the reports on Wednesday came out that it was going to happen.
Yeah, there was, if anybody's read any of the blogosphere's comments, it was pretty much universally sad that the Tribune was passing and that the Journal will be left as the only daily paper in Albuquerque. Now, with the passing of the Tribune, I'm speaking of it like it's a person, but sometimes it feels like that. All that we have left is the Journal, and there's not going to be really as much city coverage in Albuquerque. The Tribune was, with Kate Nash and other political reporters, was just way, way better than any other paper in the city for covering that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the thing is that that's what they did the best, is that they actually covered stuff in the city, and they didn't try to go and make their paper something bigger and try to aspire to be something that they weren't. So I think that's the thing that most people miss the most, is the political coverage and the actual coverage about wanting to make it a paper about the people inside of it, not just trying to be the best paper they can be.
Well, I mean, not to be the best paper they could be. Obviously, they were a very good paper, because you look at the kind of reporting that they've been doing. If you read anything in the past week about the stories that had come out, there's the Pulitzer Prize winning story. There's stories from back in the 30s that were nominated for Pulitzer Prizes. One of the columnists said it was part of the death of serious journalism, and it's kind of true, because it may not have had the biggest circulation. There was only something like 9,600 people at the end, but it was real journalism. It was a real newspaper.
Yeah, and they did their own reporting, and they did what they thought was right when they went and reported things. They didn't just do what they thought would get readers or do whatever. They did it because they thought that's what was right. And I think that's what you got out of a lot of the coverage in their paper, and even the Journal's coverage, of the eventual demise, was that they were going to actually, see this serious journalism basically disappear. I think the Alibi is going to have to really try to step up, because they're basically the only ones that really have, I think, what it takes to actually even pretend to fill the shoes of the Tribune.
To even care. To even look like they're caring.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is that, and I hope the Journal or someone hears this. Well, maybe not, but I hope the Journal hears this and at least sees that people want to see serious journalism, not just stuff that people, that will get readers to buy their paper, And that's the thing, is that's why people are going to miss the Tribune, and that's why all of us are sad. Especially as it just came out last Wednesday that it was going to be no more. And then Saturday was the last paper, so we didn't even have any time to actually, to actually say goodbye, really.
Yeah, it was a very, very sad thing. There's other news going on, though. We could talk about the Tribune for 20 minutes, 30 minutes if we wanted.
Well, you don't want to hear that, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure if you want, you can go read all around. Duke City Fix had a couple of good stories. Coco Posts, Coco had a good story. And just everywhere, pretty much every blog.
And even on the Tribune's website, they had a lot of really, really good comments on a lot of their stories about, their closing. And it was just really neat to see all the different, all the different people that have been touched by the Tribune, especially a lot of journalists that work not even close to here now and heard about it and felt that it was really important to say something, that paper helped them become real good, serious journalists. So, yeah, go check that out.
Another big thing that actually came out today, we're recording this on Monday. It's Monday afternoon, and there was a story in the New York Times this weekend about Bill Richardson, and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are both trying to get his support, get his endorsement. But a little part of that story was when they asked him about being vice president, he kind of changed his tune a little. Before, he always said, "I have the greatest job in the world. I don't want to change it for anything. I'm governor of New Mexico, blah, blah, blah. I have a beard. And now he's saying, well, if they come to me, I'll think about it. It's, you know, it's not something I'm I want necessarily, not something I'm asking for, but I will actually look for it. So now he's starting to enter the discussion to be a vice president, be a vice presidential candidate again.
Yeah, and I think that was his plan all along. Really, he couldn't say it when he was actively running for president to say, oh, I want to be vice president. So I think he was kind of, you know, playing the game. Is that what you think?
Well, it's not even when he was running for president. It's also since he's dropped out of the race, he's said, you know what, I'm just going to stay as this no matter what, blah, blah, blah. But now he's kind of changing his tune. Now he's kind of softening that, perhaps showing that he wants to be considered to be the vice president.
Have you seen, like, a softening through times ever since he dropped out? Because I could see that, where he'd say, no, that this would be, you know, I want to be president or nothing, you know, or you just go back to governor or nothing at all. And since it's kind of progressed, right, pretty soon next week it looks like he's going to say, oh, yeah, sign me up.
Well, maybe not that dramatically, but give it 2 weeks. He'll, I don't know, he's kind of hard to peg, because everybody knew he was going to run for president beforehand. It was just an open secret in New Mexico that Bill Richardson is going to announce he's running for president. But this, it's people just don't know if he really doesn't want to run for vice president. Maybe his political career is just going to be over after 2010. I can see him just going, being on the board of some business and just not disappearing, but not being involved in politics as much anymore. Maybe he's just tired of it, because since he dropped out, he's looked very tired of the political process.
And especially since the recent session with the state legislature, just been, you know, you could tell it took a lot out of him. So, and I don't know if that's all to say that it was, you know, that both of those two, that, you know, the governor and the legislature didn't make it hard on each other, but.
Yeah, and it's just after the legislative session, and he just got off the campaign trail, so we can't. He might just need some time just to decompress, some time to take a step back from the craziness of New Mexico politics and the craziness of presidential politics. But another big story this week was well, it's not a big story, but the Senate race between Heather Wilson and Steve Pearce on the Republican side, and Tom Udall on the Democratic side. Steve Pearce and Heather Wilson got into a bit of a argument where Steve Pearce said something about England is exporting more terrorists than the Middle East, or more, I don't know how he put it, probably Islamic extremists or whatever the right-wingers are saying these days. And then Heather Wilson comes back and attacks him. She says, you know, England's our ally. A U.S. senator... I have the quote in front of me now. A U.S. senator can't afford to offend our closest ally, particularly when he is wrong on the facts. And that's kind of the knock on Steve Pearce. He doesn't have the best international relations. And I don't know if that's what we need at this point in time. What do you think about the Republican backbiting in the primary?
Well, I can't say that I didn't see it coming before, because they've both, you know, their campaigning previously has been pretty tough on each other, and I just don't know if it's really the smartest thing for them to be doing.
And Steve Pearce is insane. There's that too.
Yeah, but I was pretending that didn't really exist. But yeah, it's hard for them to actually. It's basically like they think whoever wins against each other is gonna win the actual seat, and I don't see that happening to begin with. And they're acting like this is the be all end all of the whole thing, so they're just bashing each other to no end. And do they think the Democrats aren't going to use this stuff against them in the, you know, when the actual race comes in November?
Yeah, and actually Tom Udall's favored to win. Tom Udall has more money than both of them. Tom Udall, was polling ahead of them in those last polls back in November, but nothing's changed since then except Heather Wilson and Steve Pearce have bashed on each other. And that's not going to stop. They have until June 3rd? For the primaries?
Yeah.
Tom Udall has to be smiling right now at this. Tom Udall has to be very, very happy that Heather Wilson and Steve Pearce are attacking each other. And he's just sitting back there collecting money and just waiting for whichever nominee to come out. And he's going to have twice as much money as them, maybe twice as much money to spend.
Not only is he going to have the money, but he's also going to have, you know, the ammunition against them, and they're not going to have that against him because he doesn't have to go out there and, you know, and bash heads in order to even get the spot. So
that's probably why Rothenberg Political Report said today that this is the second most, the second best race for the Democrats. And there was also a couple days back, there's another one where it says this was, what was it? I think it was The Fix at Washington Post. Says it's the second most likely race to flip behind Virginia. So
yeah,
things are looking good for New Mexico Democrats right now. And I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about.
The one last thing, I think we've gone past our time that we've decided, but who cares? I think everyone loves it anyways. No, but the one thing that I wanted to get to was the fact that that there was some talk that people were going to try to make, you know, try to get Brian Colon out of the state chair, and it turned out that he got a whole bunch of, you know, applause and all kinds of stuff during this weekend, and I was wondering what you thought, since you just took my computer from me. Yeah, it's that one. We do this live, just to let you know.
So. Oh, yeah, I was trying to go over, because we both read about this, I think, at Democracy for New Mexico.
Awesome.
That's a great, great blog, Democracy for New Mexico, democracyfornewmexico.com. Go read it. Brian Colon is the state party chair here in New Mexico, as many of you know, after the Democratic caucuses, and the caucuses didn't go as well as we had hoped. They went well in that there was 151,000 people.
There was a lot of a big turnout, but there just wasn't the type of, you know, it wasn't ran the way people wanted it to be. But, you know, but yeah, there was some good and some bad. But they want, but Colon.
Yeah, there's rumors that Brian Colon would, there'd be an attempt to oust Brian Colon. But then when we got to the, or not we, but when people got to the event, the State Central Committee meeting?
Yeah, in Albuquerque.
There was standing ovations for Colon. Everybody was happy with the job he did, because I think most people are coming to realize that he did this completely undermanned, not enough money, and it's not his fault. It's just, we need to get more volunteers out there. We need to get people to donate money to the Democratic Party. This is a very important election, and Brian Colon is doing, he's actually doing a very, very good job.
And the thing is that he didn't even know that it was really going to be a big turnout until the governor dropped out. And then all of a sudden, everyone decided to turn out because they thought it was going to be, you know, a slam dunk for Richardson. So I think that, you know, you can't pin it all on him. And actually, over there on Democracy for Mexico, it says that people were wearing pins in support. And, you know, it's just that people weren't going to bring him down, because I think that they know that it wasn't his fault, and also it looked bad if we try to scapegoat someone for this, because we know that it's no one's fault.
Yeah, Brian Colon, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I'm starting to, before I was really critical of him, but the more you read about what happened, it's not his fault. He did a very, very good job. And another thing that people are, this is going back some, but I'm going to talk about it anyways, about the 17,000 provisional ballots that had to be counted. The reason it took so long is because that's an insanely high amount of provisional ballots. That's what, there's 8,000 of them that were eventually validated. That means they had to go through those other 9,000 and prove that they weren't valid. That's a lot of work. And
they don't go to prove that they're not valid. They do everything they can to make sure that they are valid. So, you know, they're doing, even if they don't find one day, basically go to the next one and go to the next one until they've exhausted all of them. So it's not like they just go and go, okay, we can't find it in that database, throw it away.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
Process.
The ones who, those ballots who weren't, that weren't counted, those are the ones that you had to go, they had to be checked one, two, three, four different ways. That's just more and more time. And it was just volunteers. There's not, Democratic Party in New Mexico doesn't have enough time to, or money to pay people. Hell, Brian Colon's a volunteer. He's not paid for what he's doing. Okay, well, I think that's it for our inaugural podcast. If there's anything you want us to talk about, you can always email me at FBIHOP, that's FBIHOP @gmail.com, or you can email Paul, he's at NMFBIHOP @gmail.com, and email us. go to the blog at nmfbihop.com. And anything you want to add, Paul?
Yeah, and just let us know if you want us to change anything or if you like the podcast, if you don't like the podcast.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress, yeah, and we'll try to do it every week, but we'll see how that goes. All right, thank you for listening.